Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Implementing Security with IBM Session Manager for COS. Today's presenter is Peter Sedell. Peter is a technical specialist for the Kix tools based at IBM Hursley in the UK. His responsibilities include support for IBM Session Manager for COS, working with the development team to deliver new releases. He presents regularly at worldwide conferences on Kix-related products and topics. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Peter.
Thank you, Joseph, and welcome everybody to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. We're going to talk a little bit about the mainframe, about System Z and IBM Session Manager and implementing security. There's a couple of initial slides that we need to get past that just talks about trademarks and various notices. So, Joe, can you move just slowly past the first two couple of slides and get to slide 4, I believe, for the agenda? Okay, that's great. Thank you very much. So today's agenda, really the reason for putting this presentation together is that over the last couple of years we've delivered some new releases of IBM Session Manager, one of IBM Session Management offerings. And as we've been working our way through these releases, we've been more involved in the area of governance, the area of security. And certainly in the last 12 months, certainly during last year, we started to see a lot more customers asking questions about security and support for various methods of accessing secure applications. Now, as we worked our way through these releases, we tested some of the functionality that we added into the new releases, and it seemed to me as we went through this, it was a learning exercise, I think, for a lot of us who were actually involved in the testing. So it seemed to me a good idea to put together a technical exchange that talked about the options that you now have when you're actually trying to access applications on System Z, simply because it is a matter of consideration as to which particular security option you'd like to take, which level of security you'd like to take. And there's also an added complication with the session management product, and as we'll see in the presentation, it can be any session management product, not just IBM Session Manager, but there's an added complication in that once we've actually signed on, how do we actually maneuver our way around the systems? So let's move on to the agenda, let's move on to the topics, and let's start with System Z security. And can we move on to slide number 5, please? Okay, so this is not supposed to represent a target. I know it does look like one, but it is in fact just a diagram that actually shows us the security levels that are now implemented on System Z right from the very heart of the system and working our way out. If we look at the center of the diagram, we're talking about the Z architecture hardware. So the Z architecture hardware has a number of different states in order to support the security that we have. We have the Processor Resource System Manager, which is integrated with all System Z models. So all of these can give us a high level of security. We've also got certain functionality such as CPACF, which is cryptographic code processors working within the operating system itself. So this gives us a great capability in terms of being able to support cryptographic conversations that need to take place between the client and the host machine that we're working on. As we've expanded businesses over the years and we've moved out to more and more web-based business and we've developed faster and faster methods of being able to develop applications that can access applications themselves on the host, then we start to see the need for more of this security. So right at the heart of System Z is a very, very tightly coupled security level. On top of that, we then build on ZOS security. So we have our external security managers, our external security mechanisms. We have RECF. We have Unix System Services security on that. We have Sysplex security and ICSF as well. So on top of the hardware, we're now actually building with the OS itself. As we then move out, we then move into the area of security exploiters. So now we've got a large number of software providers who are starting to use the capabilities of the platform to be able to deliver software security products. We've actually talked about a number of them here in terms of the Tivoli software family, and we've also got external vendors such as CA giving us ACF2 and Top Secret. Now also on the area of IP connectivity, we've got the private key infrastructure, secure sockets layer, and ATTLS, the application transport layer. So you've then got three levels of security that you can actually exploit when wanting to choose which applications that you want to run with. Then sitting on the outside, we actually have the subsystems that use those security capabilities within ZOS. There's a number of certifications that come with the hardware, and if we move on to slide number 6, we'll be able to see some of those certifications. There is external recognition that's delivered for security on System Z. There is something called the Common Criteria Testing. Now, this is a IT computer security laboratory that has been accredited to conduct IT security evaluations so that platforms conform to the Common Criteria International Standard. It's recognized by a large number of countries, USA, Canada, and the European Union. It's been established for quite some time now, and it goes through a number of what we call evaluation assessment levels. And as you can see, the common criteria levels there, they go from 1 to 7, where we're talking about functionally tested and going right through to formally verified design and tested. So there's a number of security, a number of pieces of software that have achieved various levels of evaluation. So System Z itself has achieved a EAL level of 5, which is quite high. The Tivoli directory server has achieved an EAL level of 4+. So there's a lot of information in there in terms of being able to verify that the platform that you're using is secure. There is also something called the FIPS level rating, which is a federal program that actually, again, certifies the security that you're working with. And this also talks specifically about cryptographical processing on the mainframe. So there's a great deal of security in there. If we move on to slide number 7, we'll see that one of the exploiters of the security that's available to us is actually the payment credit card industry. So they have their own standards that they publish for being able to run payment card transactions on various platforms. Now, originally, the payment card was set up by the two major credit card companies, Visa and MasterCard. They've got their own standards that are there. American Express actually use a different set of standards, but it's a case of being able to say, well, what platforms do we trust and where do we feel that it's safe to actually run these kind of transactions? So if you look at if you search the database itself, you will actually see that there are a couple of hits there for mainframe. And the inference there is that the mainframe is a trusted multi-application, multi-identity computer. So in this instance, we're talking about the highest level of security that is trusted by one of the probably most important transaction processing functions that we use today. Obviously, we would all want our credit card transactions to be processed with the highest level of security. Okay, so should we move on to slide 8? Okay, so now slide 8 is actually talking about the new Z Enterprise. This system was announced last year. It combines a number of innovations within that IBM has delivered, and it gives us the capability of putting together a heterogeneous computer system capable of integrating many workloads. So in this instance, what we're running with, we can configure multiple partitions on the Z196, but using the capabilities of using the blades, we can actually integrate the workload so that we can run Linux and ZVM and other operating systems within the blades. So here we've got an example of running Linux and AIX on Power 7. What this gives us is the capability of being able to draw in some of the networking that we've used in the past to actually connect the computers together. So in the connecting the platforms together, we can actually give ourselves a more compact, integrated private data network, and this will all be controlled and governed by the Unified Resource Manager. So it adds a whole new paradigm to the mainframe computing, being able to deliver multi-platform functionality. We move on to slide 9. So just a few points here that I've really been talking about. So the Z196 working together is known as Z Enterprise. The Uniform Resource Manager will manage manage processing across the 196, and one or more of the ZBX frames, which form what we call an ensemble. So this has a high band virtual networking capability, all managed by Z Manager, the Uniform Resource Manager. So the point here is that there's the capability of being able to eliminate unnecessary firewalls if you're actually hosting all of your systems on the Z Enterprise. There's more websites that will give you more information on this. Okay, let's move on to slide 10. Okay, so I talked a little bit about the platform and the reasons why we want to use the platform for security and how we now want to exploit it. And one of the ways that we do this is with a session management product. And using the example here of IBM Session Manager for ZOS, what does it do? Basically, it gives us the capability of providing secure access to multiple ZOS systems and Unix and Linux systems from a single 3270 terminal. It allows those sessions to exist on either an SNA or an IP network. And it allows us the capability to be able to connect to multiple applications and navigate around those applications all from one single screen. We also have a high availability option on there so that we can try and achieve 24/7 capability for all of the users that are signed onto the system. Now, when we normally implement these systems, there's normally a small group of people, be it network systems programmers or ZOS systems programmers, who actually maintain the system and look after the system. But when it comes to users, the users will be in their thousands. So we need a fairly robust and secure system. Certainly some of the customers that we have today and for most of the session manager products, they have users that are in the 40, 50,000. So it's a very durable piece of software. Okay, let's move on to slide 11. Okay, so the key features. As I've mentioned, the session recovery across the Sysplex, the centralized administration, and we also have what we call TPSL. It's a Rex-like scripting language. This gives us the capability of being able to automate logon to various applications by using a scripting language so that the user, once they've originally signed on, they can select a specific application, they don't have to re-enter user ID or password. Now, the way that we would probably implement that has grown considerably over recent releases, and that's the reason for putting this presentation together today. There are some additional benefits to using a session manager. We have something that we sometimes inappropriately call the spy function, and that is basically a capability of being able to look at another user's terminal in terms of problem determination. Now, it's a function that I actually use with our support teams. IBM being a worldwide company, I use this with the support teams that we have when I'm talking to them about various problems and wanting to demonstrate to them a particular problem or particular function. I can either go into a demonstration mode, so it's like a 3270 webcast, and go into a demonstration mode so that the user at the other end will actually see what it is that I'm doing. It's a fairly useful feature. So coming up at the end of next week is the GA date for the latest release of Session Manager version 3.1. We've got a couple of new features in there, a lot of security and installation and configuration enhancements, but one of the features and functions that we've put in is support for password phrases. So not all subsystems that we want to access from Session Manager will be supporting password phrases at the moment. So it was a fairly interesting process that we went through in terms of being able to test this and being able to still manage to navigate our way through to the various subsystems that we needed to access that still didn't support a password phrase. So let's move on to slide number 12. So this really is one of the key points of the decision that you may have to make when you come to deciding what level of security that you actually want. When we talk about the subsystems that we work with, say TSO or KIX or DB2, they've probably already got some level of support for a password or a password phrase. Now, the implementation there is fairly straightforward. You can enter your password or your password phrase into a single field, and dependent upon what value you put in, the subsystem behind it will determine whether you've entered a password or a password phrase. But when you're actually signing on a user to a session management product, you have to think a little bit more about how many subsystems do we have and what do they support beneath them. So when we first sign on, we can come in through a TN3270 session, and we can sign on using a traditional user ID and password or passphrase combination. That will then get us into our session management product, and we will probably then be presented with a menu list that will show us the list of subsystems that we want to, and applications that we want to sign on to beneath that. Alternatively, we could implement a secured logon using the Express Logon facility or Certificate Express Logon, which actually gives us the capability of logging the user ID on virtually automatically. It will take a certificate and pass the certificate across to IBM Session Manager, and then that will then be validated, and Session Manager will then continue and deliver the menu, and we will then decide how we're going to then select applications. When we actually do sign on and put a request across using a Express Logon facility, we can also pass across this request with a pass ticket. And this is a very popular route that a lot of our customers have chosen, that they have a certificate access at some point, and that certificate can be held in various locations. One of our customers actually holds the certificate on their corporate ID badges, and the idea there is that they can walk up to any workstation within their installation and they can Bluetooth the certificate across to the workstation and then pass it across into the session manager. Once we've actually got through into the session, we want to get through into the applications, we can then set up a pass ticket data profile within the external security manager to define pass tickets for that application. And the pass tickets will then be generated at a time that we navigate in between the application and the menus. Alternatively, we could just go through the normal standard procedure of sending a password or a passphrase across to RACF for validation. And how we choose to do that, we can do that either by requesting that we prompt the user for some form of identification again in terms of the password, or we can script the whole process and the entire process will become transparent to the user. They will just move directly into the application. So let's go into a little bit more of the detail of the different options. So let's move on to slide number 13. So first, why would we want to implement a single sign-on? Well, it's a secure encrypted link. We're probably coming across an SSL socket here, and we know then that we're using the certificate to authenticate to the application that's listening. So we've gone through and defined this particular port to be secure. So we're using the additional capability that the platform is offering us. The password as such is no longer stored in the started task storage. It can be passed straight through. So the express logon is almost giving us a firewall type capability. And the need for a manual logon has now been eliminated. So it's a fairly automated process that we can actually sign in. So let's move on to slide 14. So this is an example of the parameters that we used in our 3270 server for SSL by adding this to the parameter file in the telnet parameters that we used. We've got a secure port definition. We're saying that the connection type is secure, with the keyring SAF specified, and the client authentication is a SAF certificate. And then we've got a timeout period, and we also specify express logon. So we now know that when we are connecting via this port, we will be connecting down the certificate route. Within the security manager, and in this case we're using RACF as the example, we then need to create this PTKT, this pass ticket data profile for the application. So we can then put parameters in to say that we've created this pass ticket data application, and we then specify the secure sign-on with a key mask parameter, which is a unique parameter for that particular application. So let's move on to slide 15. So now that we've got our setup, we know that we actually want to be able to record a macro to support our sign-on. And what we would do here is that I'm using personal communications, but to my knowledge, virtually all 3270 emulators will run in this fashion. So we go to the toolbar and we select the actions, and then we start recording a macro. So we give it a relevant name. We start to select the record format of a macro file. We say we don't want to wait for a user wait time. We just want to go straight in. And then there should be a checkbox in there to say, is this an express logon for macro? So you then do that and enter the pass ticket data profile name that you specified earlier. Perform the keystrokes you would normally use to log on. Okay, so all you do there is that you then type in your usual user ID and password. And once you've been logged in, you click stop recording. Okay, so once that recording has been saved away, you can then go straight in. And when you open up, if you specify to run the script automatically every time you open up the session at this port, the next time you connect, you should be automatically logged on. So that will save you having to input user ID and password. And I have to admit, I'm very good at being fairly lazy about the way that I do things. And I found that to save me the keystrokes of having to re-enter my user ID and password, and when we get to password phrases, it gets even more complicated. All I need to do with my PCOM session is click the disconnect and reconnect button, and I'll be automatically passed straight in to the menu that I want to be at. So it's a usability enhancement as well, if you so wish. Okay, let's go on to slide 16. So some of the things we have to define, the profile name definitions, there are certain rules about the profile names that we use. You could have a qualifier that you could use in the profile name for the pass tickets. But there are certain naming conventions that are required for TSO, KIX, and IMS. So KIX is requiring the VTAM application name or the generic resource name if you've defined that for KIX. With IMS, it will require the IMS system identifier. And in TSO, it will either require a generic resource name or the actual value TSO plus the four-character SMS system identifier. And then for MVS batch, it will be MVS and the SMS system identifier. So those definitions have to be observed for the various subsystems. Okay, let's move on to slide 17. So a brief summary here of how RACF is processing a pass ticket for us. What it actually does is that it looks at the password field as you sign in with the user ID. If you actually put the password in the password field, then your validation is complete, you're signed on, and we stop processing. But if it's not the RACF password, then processing will continue. So RACF then looks to see whether a secured sign-on application profile has been defined. So it's looking for the pass ticket data class there. If the profile has not been defined, RACF assumes that you're trying to get in with a password, and it will send a message back to the user saying, I'm sorry, your password's not valid. If the application has been defined, then your processing will continue. So it will then evaluate what has been entered in the password, and that evaluation will then determine whether it's a pass ticket consistent with this user ID and the application and time range. Now, when we're talking about time range, we're actually talking about within plus or minus 10 minutes. And this was always a great help to us when we were actually doing some of the testing for this, because we knew when we were trying to test out some of our scripts, if we tried to generate pass tickets and we were getting a value back but we were still getting errors in the script, we knew we had a 10-minute window in which we could actually get in and correctly complete the pass ticket processing. So it will regenerate a pass ticket each time once the expiry period has gone through. And then it then keeps the pass ticket value between the client and the application. So once it's processed that and it's quite happy with all the criteria that it comes up with, it will then give the user access to the desired application. Okay, let's move on to slide 18. So how did we do the definitions in Session Manager? So if we were trying to use the Express Login feature and we were going to a single instance of Session Manager, then we didn't really need to concern ourselves too much with a generic resource. But if we're using a generic resource so we could sign on to multiple versions of Session Manager, then at version 2.1 we needed to put some modifications into an exit called ISZ EXT21. Now, Session Manager comes with a small number of pre-built exits that we use, and the exits are used in processing security. So 21 is the predominant security exit. That is the exit that will respond to your user ID and password and make the relevant security call into the security manager to verify that you have access to session manager. So at 2.1, we actually had to make some exit modifications. But with version 2.2, which is the version that is there today and will be superseded next week by 3.1, we added a new system parameter to tell ISM what the generic resource name was, and therefore you didn't have to make any changes to the exit 21. So you could now use the express login feature without having to make a recommended change to the exit. If we can move on to slide 19. Okay. So what we needed to do for pass tickets was that we needed to generate the pass tickets and make the request into the security manager so that the pass tickets will be generated back to us. And we did this by the use of another exit. So this exit is exit 31. What this does for us is that it gives us the capability of being able to store the pass ticket value in an internal variable. Now, I've mentioned the Rex-like scripting language that we use, and within that scripting language, there is a number of variables, large number of variables, that we can use to keep the values for the variables that we're using with each individual session. So that when we actually do a start script, and a start script is a script that runs when we actually request access to the application. So once we get to the application, we're actually running a start script there. We could use the internal variable of UC_passticket, or we could use the normal variable T_pass, which will contain your password, because these will be encrypted values. So either of these could be used, and we would then go and make the request to the security manager, and the values will be turned back. In version 2.2, we also added an additional parameter so that we could actually enter a second user ID if we wanted that user ID to be used by the pass ticket generator routine. It's just an additional parameter. It was an enhancement request that actually said, well, I want this user to be passed across so that we can use that generic user for the pass ticket generator routine. Okay, let's move on to slide 20. Okay, so on this slide, we've now got two examples of the scripts that we actually use to put pass tickets in. So our first script is called E31init. It's an initial script. We run this before we get into the application. What this is actually doing is actually taking some data that we've specified on the application parameter and passing it across to the user script so it can be used later on in the script that we need to access the security manager. So our second script there is exit 31. Now there is a structure to the exits that session manager uses. I've already talked about the fact that we have some assembler programs which come pre-assembled and are delivered with the product, but you can also run a script, you can also run an exit rather as a script, and we enable this by specifying which script we want to run on one of the configuration statements when we start Session Manager up. So what we're doing here is that the normal order of processing is that we will run the exit script first, and the exit script will then determine whether we actually need to go ahead and call the external routine itself. With Session Manager 3.1, we've actually removed the need to have an assembler module making the RACF calls. We've actually superseded it with an internal script. So we set up the internal script so that we can then use password phrase support, and all the RACF calls will be made from that script. So what we've got in script exit 31 is that we just set some internal variables. We set the initial pass ticket, we clear that out first. We set the Apple name to say that it's not found at the moment. And then we can set a return code to be 52. And 52 has a very specific value. 52 is the value that we set the return code to if we actually want the script to allow the exit to be called. So we check to see if we've actually got the data that's been passed to us. If we haven't got the pass ticket, then we'll set it to the password and we won't call the assembler exit. Or we can actually set the pass ticket token. So that's an example of the internal scripts that we use to generate pass ticket support. And they're used in conjunction with the assembler exit that we're using as well. So if we move on to slide number 21, and what we have here is a script that will actually sign us into TSO. And what we're doing here is that this script is delivered as a sample with the product. The reason it's delivered as a sample is that there is a difference between various TSO logon screens per installation. So there may be a difference between the way you sign on to TSO from one installation to the next. But what we're doing here is that we've got a do statement that says, okay, we will wait for the application, we issue a wait Apple with a no display, and the outscan verb is then saying, I'm looking for a text value of enter the user ID on this screen. Now it will do that until a particular time expires. We have a do max statement that gives us a time for this to expire. So when it expires, we can then go to a message and say, well, we never found the enter user ID. So here we are assuming we find enter user ID. What we then do next is that we say at, we do a set buffer address of 2-1, so that's row and column. We then say we're going to put the text of the T user, that is the value that we signed onto Session Manager with, and we then issue the command input key enter. So what we've done there is that we've actually simulated the user signing on with their user ID. What we then do next is we say, now I want to wait and get a response back from the application, and I expect that response to actually have a value in there that says enter your password or put your password here. So when we actually find where the password needs to be placed, we then set that value of that column to a internal variable called outscan column. We then input again, we then put in the pass ticket key that we're entering here at this point, and then we do an input key of enter. And that should take us into our TSO application, and there we could have used either the pass ticket internal variables had we had our pass ticket data profile set up, or we could have used the T underscore pass for the password. So that's just an example of how Session Manager is scripting access to the individual applications once we've signed on. Okay, let's go to slide 22. Okay, so with the new release that comes out to with Session Manager next week, we implemented password phrases. And password phrases are seen as a better form of security than a password. I think we actually say that they are easier to remember than a password, which is possibly true. But for those of us who work with systems where we know we have a set expiry time and we have to reset passwords, one of the big problems of a password phrase is actually keying it in correctly. That's why I like to use macros and scripts, as I mentioned earlier, because it saves me the effort. The opportunity for human error, or user error as we like to call it, when keying a password is greatly reduced when comparing it to the password phrase. So the rules for the password phrase is that it can be from 14 to 100 characters in length. Now, if we use the ICH exit, we can then reduce that length further, minimum length further, to 9 characters. Okay, so you now have a password phrase of 9 to 100 characters. It will then have another set of rules that may apply at installation level. So you need to look at, you've got to have two alphabetic characters. You can't put your user ID in. You need to specify at least two non-alphabetic characters. No more than two consecutive characters can be identical. And also, we had a installation security level that you could not use. You had to have five words of four characters or more. So if you came up with the idea that a password phrase of something like "the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog" would do, it wouldn't. If you substituted all your O's for zeros, then it would. But as I say, the capability of keying errors when you're trying to put the value into what is a hidden field gave us some interesting challenges, shall we say, when we were testing password phrases. In fact, what we actually did was that we decided to switch off most of the rules to do the initial testing to make sure we were making the RECF calls correctly. Once we knew that we'd actually successfully achieved that, we then went back to putting the rules in piece by piece. So it's an interesting feature. There have been a number of requests from a number of customers who would like to see this feature enabled for more of the subsystems. At the moment, certainly TSO and DB2 support it. Kix is going to support it in a future release. That will be something that comes up at some point in the future. But when we implemented this, we hadn't previously set it up on any of the internal systems that we used. So we switched it on for one particular LPAR here at IBM Hursley. And it was only when the user's password expired that they actually noticed that there was a difference on the sign-on screen. So it's fairly transparent. But when you get to a session management product, it tends not to be so transparent because you need to consider the options that you're signing on with and also how you're going to sign on to the subsystems and applications that you then have beneath that. So if we can move on to slide number 23. Okay, slide number 23 is the new sign-on panel for Session Manager. Now we deliver, or have in the past delivered two panels, a base sign-on panel and then an extended sign-on panel, which allows you the capability of being able to reset passwords and processing expired passwords. So now we've introduced this new panel, and you have to configure Session Manager to have this new panel displayed. It is a system parameter that you can set, so it needs to be set before you bring Session Manager up, or you will not see this sign-on screen asking you to put in your password or your password phrase. Now, what you will notice here is that there is a third field. And that third field is actually requesting a password. That is if the phrase has been entered above. The reason that we added this was that if we had a customer who wanted to enter a password phrase for Session Manager, but then they wanted to still use a password in scripts, so they were wanting automated sign-on to their applications, then we needed to actually put the password in as well. Now, it probably sounds like an awful lot of bureaucracy in terms of having to do that, but the alternative is to switch off the scripts and prompt the user, once they've signed on, to enter their password again, or set up pass ticket processing once they've come in with the password phrase. So this really is the point that we arrived at when we first were looking at this. You need to make hard and fast decisions about how you want to go about implementing security and how you actually want to process the applications that are beneath it. Because there's a very good chance that some of the subsystems you want to get to will not support password phrases. I currently think that the majority of subsystems that run on ZOS will support pass tickets. So there is an option there. If we move on to slide number 24, what we've got here is two new parameters that we've added to support password phrases. So you have to have passphrase set to yes, but the second parameter, password required, if I set that to no, and we went back to the previous screen, you would not then see the password on that screen. So you can then enter your password or your password phrase, whichever is enabled, whichever gets you in. Okay, let's move on to slide 25. And this is really just summarizing what we've been talking about. I hope I've given you an idea as to what we've been testing in recent releases, the fact that we now support passwords, tickets, phrases, and certificates. Session Manager product is built on the strength of ZOS security, and it's highly adaptable, highly configurable, and really the choices are down to you in terms of how you want to implement security. It's something that we've kind of felt that would be something that, as most sites see governance as more and more important these days, as we see auditability of computer access becomes a very critical factor and much more highlighted these days. It was something that we felt was a good enough topic to share with you in one of these technical exchanges. So that's all I have to say. If you can move on to slide 26, please. There's some additional product resources that we have here. This chart has got a number of links in it. There's the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site that you've been directed to today to listen to this webcast. DeveloperWorks will offer you more in-depth technical information, and you can also visit the websphereusergroup.org for user group information and more product information. One of the other features that we have is the IBM Education Assistant, and the IBM Education Assistant is a good way of getting access to self-help modules in the terms of short presentations or videos that we try and keep relatively short, but to describe some of the functionality that we've delivered in the products. And there's a list of videos and presentations that you can get there. So that's all I have today. Thank you very much for attending. Thank you very much for listening. I hope it was useful. You have my email address in the start of the presentation. So please feel free to ask questions here on the call, or feel free to email me at any time after the presentation has ended. But with that, I'd like to pass the presentation back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Peter, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And we have no questions.
Thank you, Jackie. And at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.